Kelly Banks Tree Service and United Rentals.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome, welcome, welcome. It is the Green Country Gardener Program. Phone lines open 1-800-749-5936. I'm Tom. I just answer the phones. He's Larry, and he's our expert. How you doing, Larry Glass?
Oh, pretty good today. Golly.
Yeah, you've been laying some sod. A lot of hard work.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard. I'm so tired. Got to do some more today.
My goodness sakes, that's like carpeting for your yard.
We got to try to beat the cool weather.
Get it done while it's still blazing hot.
Yeah, I got to get it done while it's hot.
Oh, God.
Man, this weather.
Oh, boy.
Is it September or July? But it looks pretty good for the upcoming week. We have a threshold of rain to get through before the weather gets a bit more September-like. So I'm looking very much forward to that.
Oh, yeah. Anything between 78 and 85, I'm good.
Right. And we got all kinds of new stuff coming in at the nursery.
What do we have?
Cool stuff.
Cool. I see what you did there.
No, really. We have a few of the kind of a newer redbud tree. I don't recall. I just walked by it, and the leaf on this particular tree has no spots on it. Typically, the redbuds have spots on them.
And this one doesn't.
This one does not. And the leaf is noticeably thicker and leatherier.
Oh, boy.
So I get a feeling it's going to be a superior specimen in our climate here.
Good.
Not only for the heat and the moisture causing entomosporium and bacterial leaf spot and all kinds of nasty stuff on the leaves. This is going to be a bit more resistant to that.
Wow.
And it's going to maintain some degree of appearance throughout the summer. Mm-hmm. And that was my biggest question of the week is, oh, my God, my redbud is dying. What do I do? No.
Mary's got plenty.
They look like that every year. And the spots are just a little fungus disease that gets on them. And they're basically done with their photosynthesis for the year, so I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Yeah.
But what you do want to look for on the red buds are the flower blossoms have been set already.
Oh, good.
So that'll give you some kind of hint as to what they're going to do in the upcoming spring. Mm. So another thing you want to look for, little bumps or little scale insects, too. I haven't seen a lot of them on red buds this year, but some years, typically when we have some average weather, thank you very much for the heat. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of scale on it when the weather's a little bit more reasonable. And actually, I have seen very little when it comes to scale.
Oh, yeah. Good, good.
Yeah.
Scale.
Let's talk about scale. Let me tell you about scale. I haven't seen a lot of it on the crepe myrtles this year. Last year, we were infested with it. Just terrible.
It was a bad year for crepe myrtles from late summer all the way through the winter.
Yeah, because of the scale insect. And the result of the scale insect is a characteristically moldy-looking black mold stem.
Yeah.
And I've not seen that this year.
Good.
At least in the amount we have in the past. Mm-hmm. So the cold spell was a bit of a blessing in that case, I guess.
Reset.
And hot, dry weather helped, too. So anyway, that's the way it is.
That monsooning in between, yeah.
Yeah, really. Here we go waddling down Frank Phillips Boulevard one day, and the next day we're dust.
We almost had to bring out the oars and the canoes this spring.
That was bad. It just rained and rained and rained and rained. You know what that does to my schedule.
Yeah, I know. Puts you right back.
Puts you right back, and then. Well, anyway,
kills your sprinkler sales.
Oh, golly. Yeah, we did a sprinkler system this last week, too.
Oh, really?
And we did some hydraulic engineering on that because it's a rather large area to be done. Mm-hmm. And we did a static loop where you have, on an irrigation system, you have two sets of pipes. Mm-hmm. One feeds the valves that go around the yard. And the other set of pipes, of course, is the actual plumbing for the sprinkler heads and all that. And between the static line, which is, we call it a static because it really doesn't do much but distribute water from one place to another. If you can do a loop all the way around the house with a static, the water goes through the meter and through the backflow preventer, all the legal stuff, and then it splits on the static loop. Mm-hmm. And that circuit in the very, very back takes advantage of that split. because the water flows through a split static at half the velocity that it does on a single line.
Yeah, I got it.
And because of that, you get a better pressure, more uniform pressure all the way around the house.
Good.
Or in this case, it's just property we did. So it works out real well. And I was really on the drawing board designing this thing. Oh, my God, we're going to have problems with pressure at the very end. There's only so many pounds per square inch available.
And you did the math and you got a little nervous, right?
Got a little nervous, and we put a master valve in by the backflow preventer and then put a high density of polyethylene pipe all the way around. And the advantage of that is you don't have to have elbows. You just make a curve all the way. And every time you introduce a pressure fitting on an irrigation system, that reduces the efficiency of the system to a certain degree. And if you've got something that's 1,000 feet away and you've got all these elbows and everything, by the time you get there, you know,
but if you got a curve, it can swerve.
Yeah, right. And also, if you split it and you have a round thing,
you
have water flowing through at 2.5 feet per second rather than 5 feet per second. There's less friction loss. You have to account.
Again, you got to do the math.
Yeah, you got to do the math. You have to account for friction loss, too, on this thing. Anyway, it works great.
Super.
The furthest away system just spews water out like crazy, just like up front. So anyway.
You like it when a plan comes together, don't you?
Well, yeah. When something is successful like that, when you sit at a drawing board at midnight trying to engineer this thing, you're like, oh, eureka. Anyway, it worked out real well.
Good.
So anyway, fall is in the air. We'll be in the air, so it's time to get to work. We will be getting some fall mums shortly at the nursery. Our pansies are in at the nursery, as well as the flowering.
Rearing?
I dropped a syllable there. Flowering kale and cabbage are in, too.
Well, there you go.
The kale and cabbage is something that right now looks somewhat indescript, or nondescript, if you will. But when the temperature goes down, when you get down in the upper 30s and 40s at night, the leaves change color.
Yeah.
You get this intense red color or white color or purple on these flowering kale, flowering cabbage plants. And then that's when it really puts on a big show.
Ah, a really big show.
So you want to think about that also in the garden and make room for those, if you will. I know all these annuals, some of them are burned out.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to get something fresh in there. And actually, this week we've sold a lot of pansies.
Yeah.
Yeah. You really need to get them in. So a lot of people wait till November to put in the pansies. That's not good because the root system won't develop in too cool of a soil.
You got to get them now when it's still warm.
Not necessarily now. Actually, later on the week and next week will be a very, very good time to plant your pansies because the atmosphere is beginning to cool down a little bit and the soil is relatively warm and that will spur on some good root growth on your pansies. So when it gets cold in the winter, it's hard to believe that actually gets down cold here.
It does, sometimes.
Tell me about it.
Once every 100 years.
Jeez. that they'll survive it a lot better.
Good.
Because they have a good root system in place. So and now's the time to think about getting the pansies. And while you're at it, maybe get a bag of compost or something to help loosen up the soil because they don't like heavy soil.
Got
to
work the dirt.
Yes. And we've been planting trees, too, in this dry heat soil. And it's a bit
How's that working for you?
It's a physical challenge.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Every day is a workout.
Did you break any shovels this week?
No, I already broke the ones that are breakable, apparently. So. No, really, it's been difficult. We planted a bunch of trees this week, and the ground is so hard and dry. And actually, we got to where we were digging the hole partially and loosening up the soil, putting a hose in it, and coming back the next day.
Oh, that bad. Wow.
That bad. Yeah. So anyway, we got them in the ground. So that's done. So anyway. Okay. So that's kind of what's going on at the nursery as far as flowers and things are concerned of what's going on. We also have some good fall blooming shrubs or fall show shrubs. Great selection of dwarf nandinas. Dwarf nandinas, of course, are a workhorse in the landscape because they do survive the winters pretty well. They survive the heat okay. They just kind of sit there and just sort of do nothing. but when it gets really cold and with some good sunshine and some cooler weather, they turn this brilliant red color. So all winter long, they look really nice. So anyway, we have to think four, the fourth dimension. What's it going to look like in the wintertime? What's it going to look like in the spring and the fall and the summer? We have to consider all that when we do a landscape design. And the dwarf nandina is one plant that actually bridges that gap very well and makes a show pretty much all year round.
Cool.
So there are some plants that'll do that. And that's kind of what I like to work into people's landscapes. It's just some color here and there. And I like their insect resistance and their durability, et cetera, et cetera. So they're really good plants.
Low maintenance is best maintenance for me.
Right. Yeah. And if they get too big, just cut them back.
Cut them back. They'll grow back.
Do the old Kevin Potter thing on them.
16-cylinder hedge clipper.
That's right. I heard he got a new set now.
He did.
24-cylinder.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
How are you going to keep up with
He's out there coaling in his front yard. If you're familiar with the term coaling.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, man.
So, anyway, that's kind of fun.
You know, every now and then he stops and calls us.
Yes.
Just checking.
Oh, golly. Well, after the break, we'll talk about the grass and lawns.
Got it. All right, here we go. We'll be right back with more of the Green Country Gardener Program. And your calls at 1-800-749-5936 after this two-minute timeout.
Hello, this is Tim from United Reynolds. If you call United Reynolds Strategic Sales Team, you may not get someone directly with Bartlesville, but you'll get someone from the Tulsa Metro. These are still local people. They will be from the Tulsa Hub. They all know the availability of equipment that can be brought to that branch to take care of your needs. We are local and customer-focused. You can give us a call at United Reynolds, 918-333-9580.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is getting busy and getting ready for fall. Just in time for fall planting, you'll find new shipments of pansies, mums, and flowering kale. And they also have fall arrivals of trees and shrubs. And right now is a great time to sow fescue seed and apply pre-emergent for winter weeds. Come see what's new at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5 Sunday.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
Join KWNAM 1400 FM 93.3 and now 95.1 for Consumer Calls on the Road from 9 to noon today. Consumer Calls will be broadcasting from the Phillips 66 parking lot for Operation Clean House, sponsored by the Bartlesville Community Foundation. This recycling event is a great way to dispose of your hazardous household waste in an environmentally responsible way, free of charge. Choose your location based on the material you're disposing. Phillips 66 parking lot or Washington County District 2 barn in Duke. It's Operation Clean House.
I forgot my polyester leisure suit, my platform shoes. Got the old disco music going on, but that doesn't go well in the garden. It's the Green Country Gardener Program. I'm Tom. He's Larry. And, of course, we play some rather eclectic bumper music. We got the Oompa.
Yeah, it's
stuff
coming
up
October.
Here for,
it's
for October,
the 18th. So
yeah,
we got a couple more weeks for that.
I might even start it next week just because, you know.
Well, this September, it's got to be the longest month I've ever been through.
Oh, yeah, it has been.
It is.
Yeah.
It's only the 18th, and it seems like we've been in September for months.
It does. 1-800-749-5936. We're talking about the yard this segment, yeah.
Grass and yards, yeah. A lot of people's Bermuda grass is kind of brown right now, mine included. I wasn't about to spend all that money on water.
No.
We don't have any dirt. It's just rock and grass. And it'll come back.
Yeah.
I gave mine a little bit of a low mow.
Not quite a scalping.
I lowered it down a little bit a couple months ago. But anyway, it's a while back. I cut it down a little bit. and it'll come back fresh maybe if we have a good extended fall. Mm-hmm. It'll bounce back and look pretty good here coming up. I believe we got a little bit of precipitation, anticipating that Monday night
into Tuesday,
and some cooler weather, so we should see somewhat of a recovery on the Bermuda grass. Mm-hmm. So look out the window, it's just the old Bartlesville brown, you know.
So we got some brown leaves on this tree across the street. It's not from the usual stuff for fall. They burn up.
Actually, I came across at a vacant lot, a white pine.
Ooh.
And nice. This tree was probably 45, 50 feet tall. It looked absolutely pristine. Mm. And it is, I know the grass all around it was brown. It hadn't been watered. It's a beautiful looking tree. Mm-hmm. So, wow, that's the best looking white pine I've ever seen. And it's growing in an area under total neglect.
How do you like that?
Yeah. And actually, we're digging some dirt around the area, and it's just rock.
Oh, my gosh.
A lot of these plants are really members of the pine family, et cetera. They're very well suited for mm-hmm. periods of dry weather. So don't worry about your pines suffering too much, and try not to overwater them. That's what kills them the most, is too much water. Anyway, getting back to grass now, mm-hmm. is the Bermuda grass will make a little bit of a comeback. The zoysia grass will, too. Fescue grass, though, we'll probably have to do some reseeding. Not only have we had some attacks with army worms, mm-hmm. and thank goodness they've come through already, but the heat and the drought have mm-hmm. done some damage to people's fescue lawns. So you take an assessment, look at the grass. You might water it a little bit, or just wait till Wednesday, or maybe the end, maybe this time next week we'll know pretty much in what condition your existing fescue is.
Got it.
We still are in the prime time for fescue seed establishment at this point. Mm-hmm. So if your fescue grass does come back pretty well, then you probably don't have to do too much of any seeding at all. Mm-hmm. However, it'd be a good idea to go ahead and overseed. It's just something we have to do here because of all the pests and the variable temperatures and the heat and all that. It kind of sets it back a little bit. Fescue is considered a cool season grass. So it doesn't like the heat that well. It goes dormant in the summer. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, you want to make sure to mow it very, very tall in the summertime, as we discussed in the spring. Put training wheels on the mower. Raise it up a little bit. Uh-huh. And then as the season progresses and it gets cooler, you can cut it down a little bit lower to tidy it up a little bit. But you should have it fairly tall, about 3 inches tall on your fescue grass at this point. Now, another thing is pre-emergent herbicides. We have a big problem here with henbit and chickweed in the spring. Mm-hmm. And the pre-emergent herbicides are designed to help keep that under control. Now, as the weather gets a little bit cooler, that's the signal for these spring blooming and winter growing annual weeds. Mm-hmm. It's for their time to start growing. So we put a pre-emergent down to prevent the seeds from sprouting. Well, actually, the seeds do sprout a little bit, but they just don't finish the job, if you know. That's what a pre-emergent does. So you want to consider doing that pretty soon. If you have good, healthy fescue grass mm-hmm. or good, healthy Bermuda grass or zoysia grass, mm-hmm. you want to make sure the grass is in pretty good shape also. Keep in mind also, if you do put down a pre-emergent, you will not be able to get your seed to sprout after the pre-emergent is applied. So you want to make sure on your fescue grass, if it is kind of sickly looking and kind of thin, mm-hmm. to let your Bermuda, or golly, let your fescue grass sprout and begin to grow fairly heavily. Get it to the broad blade mm-hmm. stage before you think about doing any kind of pre-emergent herbicides. And also, if you have newly planted zoysia grass, it's very, very sensitive to pre-emergent. And you could very easily just about kill out of zoysia lawn by mm-hmm. over-applying pre-emergent herbicides. Mm-hmm. So be very judicious and very proper about how much you put down in the case of the zoysia. You might, before you put down a pre-emergent on zoysia grass or any grass, really, make sure that the moisture level is up to par on the ground before that. And that's not necessarily what's on the surface. You might want to, after this rain that's supposed to come through, if you guys can just kind of hang on to that, you know.
Yeah, we do our best.
Turn that little red knob over there the right way. Yeah, that's it. That's the way to go. And check the moisture level down deep. and make sure there's deep moisture in there. Because if we just had the moisture in, say, a 1-inch layer after this little storm brushes through, that's not enough water to get it enough moisture down for the grass to really survive. So pre-emergent, I would say let's wait a little while on that at this point. Traditionally, we're thinking pretty seriously about putting it down right now. Mm-hmm. But considering the weather conditions, I think we need to wait just a little bit on that.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, in fact, the later we go, the more perhaps you're going to have to put in some post-emergent control in the spring once it comes up.
Gotcha.
So, as far as fertilization, it's the very last, the absolute last time to put any kind of fertilizer down on your Bermuda grass. Mm-hmm. Then it's also getting time to put down fertilizer on your fescue grass. I wouldn't put much of anything on zoysia grass at this point either. Mm. It's not going to do a whole lot of growing. It's going to get a little cooler coming up this next week.
Mm-hmm. Yep, right there at 78 on Wednesday.
Get down to the 40s, 49.
Oh, for the lows, yeah.
51, 49. So it'll start to slow down a little bit. So you really don't want to encourage a whole lot of growth. It'll be kind of spindly and really just kind of a waste of time and money. But if anything, give it some water at this point if we don't have a lot of rain. So Bermuda grass and zoysia grass don't encourage a lot of growth at this point. On the fescue grass, it's time to think about doing that if the moisture levels are good. And pre-emergence, okay on Bermuda grass. Questionable on zoysia grass if it's its first year out. And absolutely not on fescue grass if you're trying to establish or you want to establish some new fescue grass with some seed. So there's so many conditions on this stuff.
Yes, there are. That's why we've got this show here.
So exactly.
Kind of, you know, get it right. At least have a fighting chance.
Exactly. And on the Bermuda grass, try not to scalp it into the fall.
No.
It needs that layer of insulation when it gets down to 22 degrees below zero for 8 weeks.
It was a one-off, I was told.
Yeah. Well, you never know.
I came down here to burn like a cinder in this global warming. I wasn't expecting that big old frosty freeze.
It took a while to get my old pickup started in that, too. I had to adjust the choke and all that.
My goodness sakes.
Nothing automatic about that.
Mm. We're going to take a quick break. It is 8:31. We'll be back after this two-minute timeout.
Peters True Value and Dewey September bargains of the month include Prestone Antifreeze 1-gallon jug for $10.99. Keep insects at bay with Ortho 1-gallon ready-to-use indoor insect barrier. Regular price $17.99. At the register price $14.99 with instant in-store rebate of $3. For handyman and honeydew projects, pick up a 50-piece Black & Decker cordless drill and tool set for just $49.99. Stock up and save at Peters True Value in Dewey.
Hey, Kevin, thinking about saving for retirement?
Yeah, but how do I start?
It's easy with Avo, a retirement coach. Let's learn the Avo bet. A is for taking action.
Not anxiety?
No, Kevin, you're going to be fine.
You sing?
Barely. V is for variety.
Huh, change up my strategy. Okay.
O is for optimize your savings.
Let Avo lead the way.
Visit aceyourretirement.org today. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, y'all, Jeff Foxworthy here. Now, if you've ever found yourself repeating the same thing over and over for 75 years, you might be Smokey Bear.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
That's why I'm filling in for Smokey to switch things up, because there's a lot more to say. And I should know because my grandfather was a firefighter. And one of the things he taught me is that the people that love the outdoors the most are often the ones accidentally starting wildfires, which means always BYOB. No, bring your own bucket to the campfire. And be extra careful with things like burning yard trimmings. Don't just walk away, or chances are you might be starting a wildfire. So for the love of the outdoors, go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Hey.
Bad. All right, let's welcome back to the program here. It's 8:33, and it's the Green Country Gardener Show, and our phone lines are open at 1-800-749-5936. I'm Tom. He's our expert, Larry Glass. Larry, what do we got?
Let's talk about the Korean dogwood.
All right, let's do
Cornus calca, or some people say kutha. Mm-hmm. Latin is an unspoken language, so you can call it whatever you want.
Well, yeah. Who's going to correct you?
Anyway, the Korean dogwood is, of course, native to China, is Korea and Japan, of course. It's hardy and plumb up to zone 5, mm-hmm. so it does pretty good up there. It's, of course, deciduous. It's a slow growth rate. It likes sun to partial shade and well-drained soil. It has a medium texture to it. In other words, the leaves aren't really that big on it. And it forms a vase shape in younger, and kind of a rounded horizontal branching with mm-hmm. age. It looks kind of statuesque with age. It's kind of a nice plant. Only 20 to 30 feet tall and about 15 to 20 feet. It's not a big tree by all means. Mm-hmm. And this leaf looks like a dogwood leaf, single and entire with parallel venation, et cetera, on mm-hmm. it. It does have flowers are anywhere from 2 to 4 inches across, depending on the variety. And there's some new ones that have some really big blooms on them, too. The Venus is a good one, and there's a pink one that's really attractive, too. And they bloom for about 2 to 3 weeks after the Cornus florida, or the regular dogwood we have mm-hmm. here in this country. And it does have a pinkish to red globular-shaped fruit in late summer. So it looks a bit like a raspberry, this fruit does on it.
Okay.
And the birds kind of like it. So it's pretty cool. So anyway, it's good thing about this plant is it's resistant to anthracnose. Anthracnose is the disease that will cause some collapse in the dogwoods, especially if there's too much moisture. So this is pretty much resistant to that. Mm-hmm. And the bark has a mottled look, say, as opposed to the dogwood bark, which is mm-hmm. kind of rough and everything. The bark looks a little bit different on the Cornus calca. I like to use this one when somebody wants a dogwood tree in a more difficult situation.
Okay.
One that perhaps is sunnier than where a dogwood would normally grow.
Yeah.
And in an area that's, the soil might be a little heavy, maybe. It'll do a little bit better. Dogwoods are kind of particular about where they're planted. So, anyway, Cornus calca, definitely one to consider. This also, the blooms are born on top of the leaves, so after the leaves come out, the blooms after the leaves emerge.
Oh, there you go.
And it sort of backdrops them real nicely, so they pop out a little bit more in some cases, too. So
nice show.
It's almost reminiscent of a rather large viburnum, if you will.
Okay.
So they're really kind of an attractive plant, too. Got a caller?
We'll see here in a second. Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Good morning, and welcome. You're on with the Green Country Gardener.
Yes, good morning. I have a question for Larry. Mm-hmm. Can you use Roundup to, if you have some scrub perennial you want to get rid of and you cut them off close to the ground, can you daub the stems with Roundup, or does it have to just be put on leaves to kill the scrub stuff?
Well, that's dependent really on the particular plant, too. Roundup was designed to be absorbed through the leaves. Now, there is a herbicide we sell at the nursery called Triclopyr, and it works that way.
I see.
The mechanism is similar to Roundup, but it is it does its control after you cut something. It comes with a little eyedropper-like thing, mm-hmm. and you put it on there, and it does a pretty good job of that, too. So Roundup is basically designed for foliar contact. So you might have some luck with it. You can experiment. If you have some, experiment with it and see what happens.
But Roundup will kill kill it if you put on the leaves of this scrub perennial.
True.
Yes. It will?
Yes.
Okay. Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your call. And you can be the next caller, if you wish, at 1-800-749-5936.
Okay, yeah. So the Cornus calca, I like it because it's a smaller tree. The mm-hmm. dogwood gets fairly large and stays a little bit smaller. And some people like to plant these too close to the house.
Yikes.
We found out when we moved into the house we're in now, there was a dogwood tree, and it was 2 feet from the house.
Oh.
Yes. And its area was dry as a bone, too. Poor thing. Just, mm-hmm. just please, please, move me. So I moved it to the backyard on the east side of the house. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was going to put in a pergola in that area, so that now it's kind of grows all through that, and it's really, really nice in the spring.
Really looking cool.
Uh-huh. And you have to get on. It's grown up a lot, too, in 14 years. It's gotten to be a really big plant. And I never make a conscious effort to water it, and it does just fine.
Right.
So, anyway, you have to get on the roof to see the flowers.
Your plants do so great at your house with very little work. How does that happen?
I don't know. But
green thumb. Welcome. Hi, you're with the Green Country Gardener. Your question or your comment, please.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
My grandmother planted a purple crepe myrtle bush in the 60s, and I would like to get a start of it. Can I dig up a root, do you think, and transplant it in the spring, or what do you recommend?
On the plant itself, it should be setting seed heads at this point.
Uh-huh,
and
it
then,
is.
Yeah, and then you can maybe start those in some pots or something, so you can watch them grow, and then they'll come up, and you'll get that particular one. So, or you can clone. Crepe myrtles are a little difficult to clone, but it can be done.
Okay, I'll give it a try. Thank you.
All right, thanks now.
There we go. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to be right back with more of the Green Country Gardener program. It is 8:40. We'll be back after this 2-minute timeout.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is getting busy and getting ready for fall. Just in time for fall planting, you'll find new shipments of pansies, mums, and flowering kale. And they also have fall arrivals of trees and shrubs. And right now is a great time to sow fescue seed and apply pre-emergent for winter weeds. Come see what's new at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5 Sunday.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house, and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
You look nice. How was work?
Well, it was fourth period civics.
The kids were giving me the third degree. Was a UFO seen hovering over Washington, D.C.? Was a fisherman attacked by a 320-pound shrimp? They'd been bitten by the fake news bug, all right? And it was holding on like a driver's ed student to a steering wheel. How was I going to get a bunch of wide-eyed kids to wise up about what they see on the Internet? Then it hit me. Like a dodgeball on field day. The name of the game was News Snoops. Each student got an article and 2 minutes to decide if it was credible or a fake. They were able to use fact-checking sites to get the cold, hard truth. Now the little hotshots are even teaching their gullible grannies a thing or two about phony news. But how was your day?
Pretty good. I got a new title today. Office Birthday Party Planner.
Oh, fun.
Teachers just have better work stories. If you want a creative, collaborative job worth talking about, head to teach.org. Brought to you by teach.org.
Good morning. It is 8:42, and phone lines are open here at the Green Country Gardener Program at 1-800-749-5936. I'm Tom. He's Larry. He knows things. I just pick up the phone. What you got, man?
That brought up a point with the colors. What do I do with my crepe myrtles right now?
Yeah.
Well, right now they've set some seed heads on them, and those can be cut off. And if the seed heads are really dried and matured, you could grow new crepe myrtles. Or just wait for them to come up all over the yard.
Hello.
But anyway, that's one way to clone them is to seed them. Another one is you could if it's a big clump, if you got a machine that'll cut that big clump down to it, you can divide it that way. And sometimes they send up little shoots here and there. My big crepe myrtle in the front, I have little ones coming up all over the yard from it. And I just kind of throw them out. But anyway, I just found one, about 30 feet away from the big crepe myrtle. Mm-hmm. It was a big crepe myrtle. So I guess I'll dig it up and put it somewhere. But anyway, on knockout roses.
Yeah.
About 2 weeks ago, they were kind of scraggly and scruffy looking. And I got in there with lopping shears.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't use my
diesel things.
My diesel powered thing. But anyway, I got it out with the lopping shears. And today I was out there doing a quick walkthrough, admiring all of my brown plants. And the knockout roses have a lot of new growth on them. So it's going to be really, really nice looking in the fall. In the past, in August, last month, I said, well, it's time to really cut them back really low. And now that they're recovering, and I'll have a good blossom show later on in the fall, up around Thanksgiving or so, even before that, perhaps, depending on the weather. I never water these plants either.
They kind of do their own thing.
Healthy as can be. Yeah. And anyway, so they're coming back, and they'll put on a really good show. And in the spring, they've already been pruned, so they'll put on a really nice show in the spring. And next August, they get it again.
Hot diggity.
They get all cut back real good. So anyway, that's kind of what to do with them right now. If you have some that are really big and out of shape, it's not too late. It's in the middle of September. Mm-hmm. You can probably squeak by with cutting them back rather sternly, but really you should have done it a month ago.
Got it.
So they probably won't have much of a chance to put on much of any blooms this fall if they cut back this late. So perhaps some selective pruning. After a while, the stems get somewhat corky, meaning they look like they're made of cork.
Yeah.
They're real thick.
I've seen that, yeah.
Real thick and kind of ugly.
Mm-hmm. Been there, done that.
You can cut them back really low, and they'll come back from below and do just fine. They're a floribunda, and they're true to nature from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're not grafted like some of the older roses are. They're grafted, and if you cut a hybrid tea rose back rather sternly, chances are the rootstock will come up with this very rapid growing thing, grows like kudzu coming out of the base of the plant, and that's your rootstock coming up. They put a very aggressive rootstock on so you can have big blooms on the top. So that's kind of what happens if you do a heavy cutback on your hybrid teas. But in your knockouts, a little bit different. They're true to form from ground up. And you cut them back, they'll send out some shoots, and it's the same genetics as the top. So it'll soon be time to put a little fertilizer down on the roses, too, so they have a big show in the fall. So not quite yet. We'll talk about that maybe next week.
Got it.
Okay, so that leads us to our shrub of the week, which is pieris. The Japanese pieris is kind of a rounded, compact evergreen shrub. And it's something different to offer in the landscape, in fall and winter and so on. And in late winter, early spring, it produces very sweet-scented white or pink flowers. So this blooms when other things don't bloom. It's not overly showy, but it does give you some show in the wintertime. The bell-shaped flowers are kind of like lily of the valley. It's sometimes called lily of the valley shrub. But the leaves on it are rather interesting, too. They come out in different colors, and reds and sometimes yellows and bronzes are kind of attractive, too. But anyway, the pieris is a good shrub to have. This plant, however, is ericaceous, so we have to be very careful how we plant it.
Oh.
And what kind of soil, and the soil pH and the soil structure. We have to be very careful about it because it does not like high pH soils.
It doesn't. Okay.
No.
Okay, good. All right, once again, our phone number is 1-800-749-5936. That'll get you in with the Green Country Gardener. All right, we're going to take a break here real quick.
Break. Okay, cool.
And we will be back in 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
From the time Frank Phillips completed his magnificent lodge home at Willow Rock in 1925 until Jane's death in 1948, they entertained the rich and the famous from all over the world. Their guests included wealthy business legends such as John D. Rockefeller and Henry Sinclair, politicians such as President Harry Truman and President Herbert Hoover, entertainers Rudy Valley, Will Rogers, and Rubinoff, famous authors such as Edna Ferber, pilot Wiley Post, Elliot Roosevelt, son of President Roosevelt. The list goes on and on. As we look back on the parties and the stories and the deals that were being done at the lodge, we realize that it truly was the Great Gatsby of the Midwest. To most of Frank's guests who were visiting from the East or West Coast, and many times from Europe, they were truly seeing a glimpse of the Wild West that they had heard so much about. While in fact that era was long over by then, Frank Phillips loved the history and wanted to do everything he could to make sure that his guests received their money's worth during their visit to his lodge and to Willow Rock. With that in mind, it was not unusual for a carload of his guests to arrive at the gates of Willow Rock in their large black sedans and be stopped by masked bandits on horseback, taken from their cars and robbed of their wallets, jewelry, and purses, and then sent on their way by the thieves. What those guests didn't realize is that these were employees of Frank's who hurried back to the lodge on horseback, arriving well ahead of the cars. When the guests arrived at the lodge and burst into the house, telling their wild and terrifying story to Frank, he would smile and point to the table in the living room where the stolen loot was on display, compliments of Uncle Frank. Once their blood pressure had returned to normal, they too enjoyed Frank's welcome to the ranch joke. They came to see the Wild West, and Frank Phillips obliged in true Oklahoma fashion. And they left Willow Rock with stories that likely got bigger and bigger and bigger over the years. That same magic continues still today at this national treasure. Welcome home to Willow Rock.
We are the entertainment you love and information that shapes your day. We are your lifeline. We are your companion. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener Program. Next week, we're going to start off with our oompa music. We're going to do the Oktoberfest stuff.
Yeah. You bet. Here it comes.
There we are.
Cooler weather, too. Yay.
Yay. Good for the little horse. get to freeze your knees. It is 1-800-749-5936. That'll get you on the air with Larry. What you got, man?
Anyway, the pyrus is a plant that is unusual. It blooms. It's kind of interesting texture to it. If you really have difficulty growing plants, you might consider maybe an obsession nandina instead.
Ah.
Because the texture is fairly similar, and some of the leaf coloration is pretty close to the same as the pyrus. Mm-hmm. So it gives you a little bit of foliage interest and some color, and the nandina is easier to grow. But if you are a good gardener and you've got good moisture and really good soil, then the pyrus is a real good one to have. I wouldn't overdo it, because our climate here can be a bit of a challenge for this plant. So, but there are some really nice-looking pyrus specimens here in town that people have taken good care of, especially if they have an automatic sprinkler system. So anyway, but they do like low pH soil, and if you can grow camellias and things and azaleas like that, you should have some pretty good luck with this plant. Mm-hmm. It does have some winter interest on it too. So.
There you go.
Anyway, that leads us into the pansy. The pansy is related to violas.
Violas!
Not this rather large musical instrument.
No.
But nonetheless, a viola is a group of plants to which the Johnny Jump Ups are related. Viola is a large genus containing up to 500 species of plants. Violas are similar, are familiar with the people living in Greece in the 4th century BC. These have been around quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Greeks used them for herbal and medicinal use, too.
So they got some healing properties.
I guess so. At least they did back then.
Not so sure now.
Yeah, it was a different story back
then. Everything was a little different.
Actually, and later on, sometime after the 4th century BC, they noticed a plant similar to the viola, but growing in open areas with more sunlight. And that's kind of where the pansy came from. So the violas and the pansies are related to each other, and the pansies typically have bigger blooms on them, and they're showier. And the pansies are available in rather large blooms, but they have fewer blooms on them, and a smaller bloom has more blooms on it. Makes sense, I guess.
It takes a lot of energy to make a
flower. It takes a ton of energy for a plant to produce a bloom. But anyway, some of the violas have more blooms on them. And so what I like to do in a composition is perhaps have the big pansies, say, in the background, and then the violas as a border.
Mm-hmm.
We've had very good luck following that premise on a design using these for fall and winter composition and spring, too. And golly, we've done several houses like that, and they've really been happy with it because it puts on a really big shoe.
A really big shoe.
Even after this last winter for a fairly long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So they respond very well to fertility, too. You can't really plant them in poor soil. And you really can't plant them in clay.
No.
They simply do not tolerate that. Mm-hmm. So when planting some pansies, you want to grab a few bags of compost. Mm-hmm. And that will help them along a whole lot.
Got it.
So they do like the cooler weather. However, we do have some for sale right now. And actually, people have been buying them up, too. It's crazy. They can't wait for fall to get here. So. But it's going to do the trick because it's supposed to get cooler after Tuesday. So anyway, so pansy is one to consider for the fall color. Also, if you got a whole lot of annuals, you might consider it, instead of taking them all out, perhaps thin them out a little bit.
Got it.
So you have room to plant some pansies in between. I like to interplant them between my annuals in the fall.
Okay.
I'll be planting a lot of pansies here this year. We have a garden tour happening this spring, and I'm on it.
Yeah.
So. No. But anyway, that's coming up too. So we need to plan ahead for that. But anyway, the pansies are something that you kind of have to do a little planning for. Mm-hmm. You really don't want to wait till November to plant them.
No.
No. So as the ground is warm and as the temperatures are going down, it's a good time to get them planted.
Right, get the roots all ready to roll.
So anyway, our perennial of the week is Astilbe. Astilbe is a shady plant. Here I'm talking about shady plants today.
Shady.
Not on those terms. But it's a shady, compact, fairly colorful.
Okay.
Very easy to grow, very showy. It must have good soil, lots of fertility. Astilbe is a very shady type plant and blooms for a fairly long period of time with these spiky blooms in the summer. They don't like drought. So it wouldn't work in this case. So you plant them where you plant your hostas.
Okay.
And I was at a house this week where they had hostas, and the deer have dined on them.
Oh, they've been using it as their little salad bar.
Salad bar, yes. But anyway, Astilbes, the Japanese painted fern is another one I like to use in the shade, the pieris, and there's some mahonias, too, that are really attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Mahonia bayli, and there's a thread leaf one that's really kind of attractive, too. So they've come up with all these different species of plants that do pretty well in the shade that can also tolerate our weather extremes.
Gotcha.
So that's one factor you have to consider also. But typically, if you want a shade garden, you really need to prepare the ground rather thoroughly. In other words, you should be able to just take your hand and reach in the soil and get it out. Because typically,
that's working it around here.
Really, tell me about it. Anyway, so these shady annuals do pretty well. They don't seem to mind the heat that much if the ground is prepared properly. And if you have enough mulch on the ground, they can do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And mulch is a kind of a very important thing. Also, it helps prevent moisture loss, helps control weeds, et cetera, et cetera. We do have mulch in bulk at the nursery. And we put some down on the landscape a couple weeks ago. The customer really liked it.
I bet.
Because the texture of this particular mulch is very uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you get the stuff in the bag, and they got like 2x4s in it, nails and whatnot. And come on,
oh, baby. My gosh.
Yeah, really. But anyway, so you want a mulch that has a fairly uniform texture to it. And I was talking with somebody last week, and they had a dyed mulch on their ground. And the black mulch, it looks really good when you first put it down. But we get a lot of wind over here, and it blows stuff out of the trees. And stuff out, and it lands in this black mulch, and it's lighter in color.
Mm-hmm.
And it just looks
trashy.
You took the word right out of my mouth. Has a tendency to look a little bit trashy, if you will.
Unkept.
But with all that debris in there. Mm-hmm. The advantage of the natural colored cedar mulch or cypress, we have cedar mulch.
It's kind of blend.
It blends together, and when the stuff rolls in from the wind, you really don't see it.
Yeah, it kind of fits in with all of it.
And we did a landscape composition, which involved some purple loropetalums for somebody.
Okay.
I said, okay, we'll put this mulch down. She said, I don't want that. I want black mulch. I said, okay, cool. Well, we put the black mulch down, and the purple pansies or the purple loropetalums disappeared. You couldn't see them for the
because there's the contrast. Yeah.
The dark colored plants and the dark colored mulch.
Yeah, there's no contrast.
You could not see them. Yeah, well, you can lay on the ground and look at them sideways.
Say,
you can
oh,
see
wow,
them,
look at that, yeah.
But you couldn't be able to see them. And the advantage of a lighter colored mulch is some of these darker leaf plants really pop out nicely, mm-hmm. especially the red nandinas mm-hmm. in the winter. They show up real nicely in the landscape. So when we do a design, we also have to consider the color of the plants and the type of mulch and all these things, all these the chroma of all this stuff as
it's
well.
It's the artist's eye, man, when you're putting together this.
Yeah, as well as the climate and the soil type and the exposure and the people's ability to maintain it. And all these other factors have to be considered when doing an effective landscape design.
There you go. And, of course, you can help folks before they ever get the ball rolling. And that's what you do pretty well. You got a cool machine.
Yeah, I know. We got a program that actually show what it looks like with black mulch and what it shows look like with that red mulch. You get this, I don't know what they use for dye, but it gets all over your hands.
Yeah.
And then it washes out anyway. So there's a reason why we don't sell that stuff. It just doesn't have the longevity that people really expect out of a landscape mulch of some kind. So. Anyway, come check us out at the nursery. We're at 4605 No Water Road, which is halfway between Washington Boulevard and Madison on the south side of the road. Mm-hmm. We have a great selection of pansies right now, a great selection of fall blooming and spring blooming trees, as well as some fall blooming shrubs. Mm-hmm. We have to keep that coming up, and shrubs that do well in the summer. And we actually got some really big crepe myrtles in, too.
Oh, nice.
So anyway, come check it out. And by all means, keep your shovel sharp. We'll see you next week.
For residential and commercial plumbing, call Mason's Plumbing, where serving you is their priority.
This is KWON Bartlesville, K227C.